And welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, January 9th. My name is Shona Strausser. We have a great show lined up for you today, as we do every day here in Juno Afternoon. We'll talk to some actors from the Perseverance Theater production of Rush It Everlasting. Erin Hansen will be here to talk about this weekend's fabulous concerts, actually shows at the Alaskan, with her band North Country Cajun Club. We'll get an update on Girls on the Run program with organizer Julie Walker. And as with every Thursday, we'll talk to Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up, Writer's Almanac, and more here on Juno Afternoon. But before we get started with our show, we'll start here with National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This week, with lawmakers remembering the 50th anniversary of President Lyndon B. Johnson's War on Poverty, some lawmakers are asking, what about Indian Country? Correspondent Matt Laszlo has the story from Washington.
The poverty rates for Native Americans and Alaska Natives are staggering. A Census Bureau report came out last year showing about 30% of their populations in nine states were living in poverty. Arizona Democratic Congressman Raul Grijalva says Indian Country has fallen through the cracks.
But for the last 30, 40 years, the neglect, benign or otherwise or deliberate, has been awful. And so the levels of poverty in Indian Country, the levels of poverty, alcoholism, lack of education among Native people in this country is an embarrassment to all of us. And in that area, we have failed and failed miserably.
Grijalva adds that federal support for Indian Country has reached its peak under the Obama administration. But he says words from the president and his cabinet alone aren't enough.
The gestures that have been made, if they're substantive in the long run, are going to do a lot to help Indian Country. But until they're more than gestures, I think the doubt that exists among Indian leaders is going to continue.
With the upcoming State of the Union address, many Native leaders are hoping the president lays out a strong prescription for the lingering troubles plaguing Indian Country. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The White House is discussing an initiative with reporters today known as Promise Zones. The president's initiative seeks to address jobs, housing, and other issues by partnering with local communities and businesses. The first five zones include the Choctaw Nation in Oklahoma. With cold temperatures across the country, South Dakota ranchers have kept an eye on their cattle, and pet owners have kept their friends warm. Near Hot Springs, Jim Kent checked in on Mustangs at the Black Hills Wild Horse Sanctuary to see how they fared.
The Black Hills Wild Horse Sanctuary has been caring for wild Mustangs for 25 years. The current herd ranges between 500 and 600 horses that run across a 13,000-acre spread of privately owned land. Sanctuary spokesperson Terry Engel says getting through South Dakota weather can be difficult for the herd at any time of year.
But the wild horses that live here, being that they are of Mustang descent, they are extremely hardy. They are very smart. They have figured out through time how to protect themselves in extreme weather conditions.
So when the mercury dropped below zero and the winds gusted to 40 miles per hour, the Wild Horse Sanctuary herd knew just what to do.
They will seek a windbreak, oftentimes either down in the canyons or up in the tree line. They will huddle up there together. They put their tail end into the wind, and they will just stay out like that.
The sanctuary's ranch crew made sure hay was available for the herd, but Terry Engel notes that their key to survival was staying together and staying calm through the deep freeze. Engel says she's not aware of any horses in the Black Hills Wild Horse Sanctuary herd that were lost during the recent cold, wind, and snow. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The University of Minnesota has received a six-figure grant to research the history of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. The legacy grant from the Minnesota Historical Society will be used by the Department of American Indian Studies. The tribe will work alongside researchers on the project. Some of the band's history to be examined in the state and nationally include gaming, treaty rights, and self-governance. The project is expected to begin this summer. On this day in 2003, a ceremony and reburial was held in Cuba for the remains of Taino people. The Smithsonian returned the remains, which were removed from their graves in 1915. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PicClickGive when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, January 9th. My name is Shona Strausser, and I'm really lucky to have in the studio with me two fabulous actors, and this is where my worlds collide in the best way. These two fabulous women are in the production of Rush It Everlasting, which actually opens in 2 days. So I'd like to welcome to the studio Charity Pomeroy and Tiffany Green. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me here today.
Yay, thanks
good
for having us.
It's good to be here, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd like to start off with just if you could give a brief overview of the show. And I know, you know, plot points and that kind of thing. So people, they're both looking at each other like, you.
You do it.
I have no idea what happens in the show. You. yeah, but just a kind of overview of who these characters are, who these people are. So it's just three people in the play. So,
yeah.
Okay, I'll start, and you can help me out. So it's the story of two women, really. It's a woman, an older white woman, and then a younger black woman who we believe used to be her maid, and times have gotten hard. It's during the Depression. She can't afford to pay her anymore, but the maid stays, and she's no longer the maid. She says that several times, but she stays there.
There's
and she
some
lives
debate
with
about
her.
That,
there's
though.
A little debate, yeah. And she stays there, and they form this very unlikely relationship, friendship, partnership, and the not maid, the black woman, she basically comes up with this idea to rob a bank. Mm-hmm. And I think out of desperation and also due to all of the glorification of the bank robbers of that time and movie stars and she goes to the movies a lot. She's a dreamer. And so she's looking for this quick fix for their terrible situation. And she decides to rob a bank and they sort of take off on this plan together.
Yes.
Kooky, crazy plan. And then there's also some other things going on in Ruby's mind.
The older white woman.
The older white woman.
Who actually
well,
throughout
I don't
the
have
play
a name
is
yet,
in
so.
several different time periods within the play and several different ages, starting out about 17 and then onward from there, age-wise. And so her journey goes from 1896 in Nevada. She ends up in on the Yukon River in 1908, and then in the 1930s, we see her again. And so she has this whole journey of trying to desperately search for something that'll fill a big void in her life. And so she's been trying to do big things, and it just hasn't panned out and hasn't panned out. And then you see her in the 30s, and it's, here's another one. And, you know, this time it's a bank robbery. Which is something that has been a big influence on her life and her past anyway. And so you have that desperation, but also from that desperation, there is a lot of loveliness, and especially with these two women.
Yeah, the relationship between these two characters is quite beautiful. And actually, I mean, you know, reading the script, it's a very poetic script.
Yeah, very
poetic.
Yeah.
And
so there's
it's funny.
Yeah,
it's funny,
too. Funny.
There's
but
a lot
yeah,
of
very yeah. Of course, it's a lot of emotion. It's not a yeah. comedy.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of comedy in it.
Yeah, with any relationship, when two people are truly, truly know each other and are truly close to each other, you become comfortable. And when people become very comfortable with each other, they become nasty with each other.
Yeah.
And they become, you know, and sort there's a lot of sort of tit for tat going on. And so it's funny. The relationship is just humorous because we all recognize that relationship in our own lives with someone.
Yeah.
And
yes.
there's this third character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Charity, do you want to talk a little bit about this other guy?
This other guy who may or may not be Butch Cassidy. And so we follow, am I allowed to say if he is or isn't?
Well,
I don't even know.
We can let the audience.
I think we make it very clear in the show.
Yeah, I guess that.
And so we see his journey as well. And he had a huge impact on this woman, Ruby, in both Nevada and in the Klondike, or up on the Yukon River. And so you see him through two time periods. And sometimes he's fully just a memory, and sometimes you're in her memory with him, experiencing what she experienced. And but he is a major guiding influence on her life in many ways, whether it's something she made up about him or something that truly happened. And that's also something that you find out. And yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really interesting because there's only three of us.
Yeah.
And Ruby Gold is the only one who talks to the other two characters. My character never speaks to or sees Jim Ryan, which is his name in the script and the name that he goes by. And so, it's really interesting. We always get to see him sort of through her memory or as a memory.
That's so funny. By the way, that never occurred to me until a few days ago when you guys mentioned it.
Yeah. The other day we were practicing our bows, and I was joking. I was like, who's this guy? Where did he come from? Because throughout the play, I never speak to him, anything.
And we have a really important cast member, I think the star of the show.
Yes.
His name is Bear, famous actress from Juneau, Alaska. And in the show, he plays Bo, the dog.
Yes, he's so cute.
It is actually a great dog.
Oh, yeah. He's wonderful.
So this is both of your first times working at Perseverance Theater.
Yeah.
And,
Charity,
you're from Skagway.
I am. I know there are Skagwegians listening right now, I hope. Hopefully my sweetheart.
Here's a shout-out to Skagwegians. And Tiffany, you're from New York.
Yeah, I'm originally from Houston, Texas, but I live in New York. I've been there for 2 years, yeah.
Oh, great. So the playwright is an Alaskan playwright. Her name is Arlisha Jones, and I'm wondering, what's it like for actors, for you two specifically, to work with the playwright just, you know, right there? How's the process been for, you know, is that daunting? Is it wonderful? Or
both.
How does the script change?
I think it's been really fascinating. First of all, her work is so beautiful. And I think she is such an amazing artist, and I really love this. And then, you know, so there's that starstruck nature, I guess, or whatever that I'm feeling. But then also she's this amazing just woman. She's this wonderful, amazing woman, and she's really approachable, and we can ask her great things. And it's been so wonderful talking to her just in casual conversation and getting huge, well, you know, what is a small detail to her, but is huge and mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
Which you never get when you just have scripts. You go through and go, why did they write it that way? And you have to figure it out.
I wouldn't have done it that
way. I wouldn't have, yeah.
This one page. Yeah, it's been amazing. I really, really love having her in the room. I really believe in storytelling, and I love the opportunity to really tell the story that the playwright's trying to tell. So having her there to ask her questions and to get her feedback and things like that, and know that she and Boston, the director, are in conversation with each other all the time, it's really good. There's just so much more material there because she's in the room, and she's really sweet, so I never feel like she's panicking about us or, you know, like having any sort of negative reactions to us. And sometimes we ask her questions, and she just gives us the blank stare, and she doesn't answer them because she wants us to figure it out. She wants to see what her words mean to us without her being too much of an influence. So it's great. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah. So you had your second preview last night.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you open Friday. So that's actually
tomorrow.
Is it really? Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Excellent. So how's it feel to be open and in previews and things moving along nicely?
I'm really excited to get a little bit of sleep sometime. I think through rehearsal, I take it home with me. I know everybody, we all do, and you get, not that I'll ever sleep after a show because you get so excited about it.
Yeah.
You're working with all these emotions, and then how do you sleep after that? But, But honestly, I'm really excited. I'm excited to have that there is this amount of magic that happens once it opens that is always astounding, I think, as an actor.
Yeah.
And as much fun as we've had and as many things as we've found in rehearsal, then all of a sudden that added element is just really exciting.
Yeah, I think it'll be really great to, and it has been great these last two previews, to sort of put the work away and trust that the work is there and just go and fly and really give to each moment and not worry about putting the pieces together, but trusting that the pieces are there and we are there to tell the story. And if we mess up, we are there to cover each other and keep going forward. And so, yeah, it'll be really exciting when we actually open.
Yeah, I love it when the show's open because then it's like everybody else is out of the room and then now it's time for you all to really take up and own the piece.
Yeah.
That's a good time.
Yeah, well, and just knowing that it's, just knowing that this is what we have and this is it. Right now, even today, we're still adding pieces and, you know, possibly changing lines and even like little costume things or, oh, there's a different table today. You know, like things like that are still happening. And so that will also be really, really great when we can just know, like, this is the world we're living in, and it's definite, and from here we just go.
Yeah.
Great. So can I ask you just the show times, dates? I'm going to have them too, but just you're like, well,
we are so certain about this.
Yeah, we are.
Somewhere about, okay, it opens tomorrow. I know that.
That's right.
And I believe it closes February 2nd.
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. And that's great. I'm glad y'all will be there. We run
here
shows Thursday through Sunday at 7:30 p.m. with a final matinee performance at 2 p.m. And people can get tickets at all the usual ticket locations, Hearthside, perseverancetheater.org. And thank you so much, Charity and Tiffany. It's been a pleasure having you in town and having you as artists on Perseverance Theater stages.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Have a great opening.
Thank you.
Oh, I like to hear a bass line, baby, that'll rumble underneath.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, January 9th. And in the studio with me, I have Erin Hansen. And here to talk about this weekend's gigs at the Alaskan, the North Country Cajun Club. Hi, Erin. Welcome
to
the studio.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming. So the North Country Cajun Club, and I will probably state the obvious, but the Cajun music, yes?
Yes. It's Cajun and honky-tonk music. So that's kind of where the country Cajun
play comes into.
Oh, yeah. See, that's funny because we were talking to that. Is it county?
I think Scott was like, I think it's country. Yeah.
Oh, did I leave off the R?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
No. I don't know why we even. I think I said it wrong.
Yeah, that's cool.
So Cajun music, what does that mean? So, like, what's the instrumentation?
Sure. Well, Cajun, you know, I think people mix together Cajun and Zydeco. So Cajun, the way we play it, is much more, you know, not necessarily electric, but it's string instruments. So kind of the same setup for a band that like a bluegrass band would have, except minus the banjo or the mandolin. So you've got fiddle for sure, guitar, bass. And then the two big things that like make a Cajun band are Cajun accordion and triangle. At least in my mind. Triangle is like a really big deal in Cajun music. And then we also love having a drummer. So, like, the thing with Cajun music is it's totally meant for dancing. I think it's the best dance music there is. So it's a real, like, driving rhythm. And every one of the instruments kind of plays a rhythmic part in the music.
So what's the, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
no.
I'm going to. What's the difference between Zydeco then? So what does that do?
Zydeco is a little bit more bluesy and usually is more often plugged in. So it's a little bit more of like a sort of mix of, it's more of like a bluesy rock kind of Cajun thing.
Got it.
So.
And how did you get into Cajun music? I mean, was it just love of or?
Really, I just randomly ended up in Texas one year and one of my friends happened to be going to a Cajun festival in Louisiana and asked if I wanted to go along. And I went, and I think maybe within 5 minutes, I felt like I was home. Like, it felt like Alaska. Like, everybody I met was super nice, and they just wanted me to love the music and love the food and love the dancing as much as they do. And, I mean, that kind of music, it's like, especially if you're in Louisiana and you watch just a huge dance floor full of people moving their boots, scooting their boots around, and it's just so fun. It's so fun. And then I came home and I ran into Sergey Morrison, who's the accordion player in our band, and he found out that I'd just been to Louisiana and kind of gotten the bug a little bit. And so he just said, all right, a year from now, we're starting a band. And so I took myself a year to start learning how to play Cajun guitar and start learning how to sing Cajun, and he gave himself a year to learn Cajun accordion, and we pulled together a couple other folks who were interested, and yeah.
Oh, well, that's incredible, actually. A year, you're like, let's do this. I love it.
Well, I mean, you know, we've been playing now for probably 3 years. We're only just now really starting to play full gigs. So.
Yeah, so speaking of gigs, it's this Friday and Saturday night?
Yes, it is Friday and Saturday at the Alaskan, and we'll be starting around 9:30. And then playing till close, so good all night kind of thing. And we're planning on kind of pushing some of those tables back and making sure there's plenty of dance space, because that's what it's all about.
Oh, great. So, yeah. Who else is in the band? So you play guitar.
I play guitar and sing.
Okay.
Sergey Morrison plays accordion and sings. We've got Andrew Heist on the fiddle and singing, and then Meriden Boria on the bass.
Oh, wow.
Colette Koss is our triangle player, and Clay Good on the drums.
Oh, Clay's playing drums.
Yeah.
Oh, very
so
cool.
In my mind, I feel like we're like an all-star kind of band. I'm maybe the weak link, but essentially we call ourselves a club because we just have a really, really, really good time.
And you know, I was lucky to be at a house where you all were practicing, and Colette on the triangle is worth the price of admission.
I know. She's been working really hard at it. And, I mean, not to say that she doesn't do a little bit of singing, because you can't resist having Colette get up there and sing a little bit. But, yeah, she's rocking the triangle. So
I mean, she's fully committed, which triangle. Yeah.
Well, like I said, it's like a joke instrument in every other form of music. In Cajun music, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Because it cuts. Like, it's a very distinctive sound, and, you know, you can spot bad triangle. I mean, it just, like, ruins everything. So a really good triangle is really important.
Yeah, well, she's great at it. I mean, she really is.
I think she's probably
impressed.
Laughing her butt off as she's listening
to
us right now.
Yes, I hope she is. Does Meriden sing as well?
Yes, okay. Meriden sings as well. And, yeah, we kind of all sing, and that's been another fun part of the band. Cajun music doesn't necessarily feature a lot of harmonizing. But because everybody in the band is naturally a singer, we've been doing more of that than would necessarily be traditional.
Is it more unison singing as opposed to harmonized
no.
voices? Or?
I traditionally, it's interesting because Cajun accordion is a really different kind of accordion than most accordions that we think of, in that each accordion has one main key. And then it can, like a harmonica, you can sort of do this cross key kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
But so Sergei, for instance, needs two accordions to play all of our songs, and probably would be easier if he even had three accordions. And because of that way that the accordion is set up, that it's set in one key, traditionally the songs are sung by men, and the main key that Cajun music is played in a C, which is pretty high for a man's voice.
Totally.
So it gets this like really kind of, I almost think of it as like the sound's kind of being ripped out of somebody's throat. Like it's this kind of wailing, stretching sound that a man usually makes when he's singing Cajun music. So it doesn't necessarily work that great for harmonizing. But then during World War II, there was a lot of crossover with Western swing, Texas swing. And so then this kind of fusion of Cajun music and classic country music, where there is a lot more harmonizing, there's a lot more focus on like kind of that smooth sound.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're like really playing Cajun honky tonk, is that we like that kind of smoother sound combined with the more raw kind of Cajun thing.
So I like the image of ripping things mm-hmm. out of threads. I gotta say, it's a very visceral image for me. But what was the basis of that, or what's the history behind that kind of sound?
Well, really, part of it, the biggest thing is that it's a social music, it's a dance music, and when it was being played, you know, the most was when there was no amplification. You know, so Cajun accordions are known as the loudest accordions. Like, Cajun music is just a really loud music, and when you're singing, when you're forcing your voice up into that higher register, it automatically makes your voice louder. And so that's kind of the deal. It's like everything's just supposed to be super loud so that you can hear it over all of these people dancing
mm-hmm.
and still like feel that kind of sense of the music while you dance.
Is there a theme of songs, Cajun-wise, that stick out from, say, country? Or is it pretty much all the same, love and heartbreak and all?
Yeah. It's lots of heartbreak, mostly heartbreak. I can't really actually think of any happy Cajun songs that I've heard. There's some songs like about eating, I guess. But it's mostly heartbreak.
Heartbreak and then eat some food. Right?
Yeah. Pretty much. It's okay. Like heartbreak and then you have some boudin.
Right.
So.
Right. So you said that you all formed about 3 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And but you're pretty new or recent to gigging a lot, yeah?
Yeah, and part of that is just learning a whole new style of music for all of us. It just takes some time to build up enough material to be able to fill 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
Which is what you kind of need to do to gig at a bar like the Alaskan. So that really this Friday and Saturday night, this is our first real deal, full-on bar gig.
Wasn't there the last time the Alaskan played? Wasn't it the fire alarm go off?
Yeah, our very, very first Alaskan gig, a fire started, and so we got
Y'all
cut off.
So hot.
We were so hot.
That you just burned the place down.
We play a song called La Flamme d'Enfer, which is the fires of hell. So
were you in the middle of that song?
No,
oh,
I know. It would have been perfect. And then we also play a song called Corner Post, and we felt like the fire started at a corner post in the Alaskan, so maybe it was somehow related.
It's all serendipitous, really.
But yeah, so part of it, too, is like we're really kicking off Mardi Gras season right now. So we're playing this weekend at the Alaskan, and then we're going up to Homer to play Winterfest. At the beginning of January, and then we're going to be doing a KRNN spotlight concert at the end of February, and then we're going to have a Mardi Gras ball at the very end of February, because Mardi Gras is March 4th, and then I think we're going over to Sitka, so we're kind of like ramping up for a big hoorah.
Oh, that's awesome. So can you tell us the name of the band so everybody can make sure that they get to one of those fabulous
yes.
shows? Yeah.
So the North Country Cajun Club.
North Country Cajun Club.
Mm-hmm. And everybody can be in the club. I mean, that's part of it. All you have to do is show up and have a good time.
That's good, because I'm a lot of country, but not so much Cajun.
That's all right. We can help you with that.
Right on. So that's this Friday and Saturday night. And mm-hmm. is there a place, or do you all have like a Facebook page? Is there anything online that we can check out?
We've got like an event thing up on Facebook. We don't really have like a band webpage or anything like that.
Cool.
But yeah, just, and we, you know, we've got posters up around town, so we'll keep doing
great,
that.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of trying to get the word out there. And I think we were hoping to try and partner with Southeast Swing this weekend to do some Cajun dance lessons. It didn't quite work out just for timing-wise, but I think that is going to happen at the end of February when we have our Mardi Gras ball.
Oh, cool.
So definitely keep your ears open for that.
So there's a different kind of style of dance, too, that people should be aware of? Or?
Yeah, it's really super easy.
It's Cajun two-step, yeah?
Cajun two-step and Cajun waltz, and like a Cajun two-step and waltz are even easier than your regular two-step and waltz.
Really?
Yeah.
How is that possible? That's lovely.
There's no counting two and one. You just go two, 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 two.
Oh, cool.
You only have to remember one number instead of two numbers.
I love it. Well, Erin, thank you so much. Erin Hansen with the North Country Cajun Club Band. They're playing this Friday and Saturday night at the Alaska, and you can check them out at 9:30. And they're just really a super group, right? I mean, it's a bunch of really great musicians all formed to make this Cajun club. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, come be part of the club.
Cool. Well, thanks so much, and have a great gig.
Thanks so much.
And now for a little bit of Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 9th of January, 2014. 2001, on this day, Apple Computers introduced iTunes, since which day more than 10 billion tracks have been downloaded from the iTunes Store. 6 years later, 2007, Apple unveiled the iPhone, and afterwards made available a software development kit, a set of tools enabling a person to create a third-party application or iPhone app. There are now more than 300,000 iPhone apps with 7 billion downloads, helping people do things like learn Japanese, train for marathons, monitor infant diaper activity, access news stories, find cookbook recipes, keep time with a metronome, or make espresso coffee. It's the birthday of Cassandra Austin, born Hampshire, England, 1773, a good watercolor painter and the sister of the novelist Jane Austen. Neither of them ever married. They shared a bedroom all their lives. When they were apart from each other, they wrote hundreds of letters, and it's from those letters between the Austen sisters that scholars have been able to piece together many of the details of Jane Austen's life. And we know what Jane Austen looked like because her sister Cassandra made drawings of her. Here's a poem for today by Ron Padgett entitled Hello Central. I attended a high school whose name was colorless and odorless, Central High School. It was called that because it was built in the middle of town, so that students could converge on it equidistantly. Then the city added other high schools, all named after illustrious men. The students there could associate their schools with these figures, but we at Central could no longer even associate our school with centrality, since by then the city had expanded and become lopsided. The name Central had become totally abstract. After 60 years, the structure was deemed inadequate, and a new Central was built in the northwest corner of town, disconnecting the school's name from its last vestige of meaning. In the many times I have returned to my hometown, I have never once driven out to see the new Central. Instead, I cruise past the renovated old structure that now is used as an office building. In my mind's eye, I dash up the steps and enter the hallways crowded with students who only an hour ago were lost in sleep. I enter room 212 and take my seat at the back of the center row and feel the day click into place when the bell rings and Miss Quisenberry looks at her roll book, brushes back an errant strand of hair, and starts down the alphabet. A rush of anticipation rises in me as she approaches my name, and when she says it, I answer, here, in a voice that makes me feel useful, like a brick. Paul Byron Paget, Hello Central, from his collected poems, published by Coffee House Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strasser. It's Thursday, January 9th, and in the studio with me, I have Julie Walker, and she coordinates the Girls on the Run program, and that's part of the AWARE shelter. That's part of their programming that they do as part of prevention. So I'd like to welcome Julie to the studio. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sure. So for those people that don't know what Girls on the Run is, can you just give us a brief overview? What is the program?
Sure. Girls on the Run is an empowerment program for 3rd to 8th grade girls. It's a 12-week program where we meet after school twice a week. We learn all about how to make healthy lifestyle choices. So we're learning things about body image and peer pressure and how to stand up for ourselves and others and just making healthy life decisions. And while we do that, we're also training together for a 5K by doing really fun interactive running games and running activities.
So you get fit and you make, you know, really healthy choices at the same time.
Right. And then at the end, they all together, all the girls in the community run a 5K together.
That's awesome.
Or walk.
And where, or depending. And where's the 5K? Where's that held?
Well, in the springtime, it'll be at Twin Lakes. And then in the fall, we actually do it indoors at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. So this May will be our next one, and that'll be outdoors at Twin Lakes.
So there's a fall portion and then there's a spring portion. So you're just gearing up for the spring session.
Right.
Okay. And how can people get involved in Girls on the Run program?
So we have lots of ways that people can get involved. Right now we are really pushing for getting volunteer coaches. And coaches are the people that actually implement the program within the schools. So again, meeting twice a week after school. The schools decide which days per week. And so it's usually around 2:30 to 4 o'clock. And so all coaches go through a new coach training at AWARE, and that's coming up on January 18th.
So it's pretty soon. It's like 9 days away.
So it's next Saturday.
Okay.
And it's an all-day training. So that's why we're here to kind of let people know about it. And if they want to get involved, they would need to just call me at AWARE and find out more about how to sign up. But so the coaches are the ones that are really implementing after school.
And so if you're a coach, do you need to have kind of previous experience with young people? And what's the best person to get involved as a coach?
Really, the best people are just those that want to inspire young girls and be a positive role model and a mentor. So no experience with kids is required. You need to be 18 years of age, and you need to pass a background check with AWARE and go through our training. Those are the only requirements. So if you want to be a role model and inspiration to young girls, if this program sounds like something that is right up your alley, even if you're not a runner, that's okay. We want them to see that just like them, just like the girls, there are all sorts of adults out there. There are runners and walkers and people that really don't like either of them, but as long as they are willing to be a role model and promote healthy lifestyles, so they don't have to run.
And are the coaches mostly women?
Mostly women, yes. Men can be an assistant coach if they like, and we have had a few in the past, but it's primarily women. They seem to be more drawn to this kind of a program.
Yeah, girls
makes
on
sense.
The run. Yes. Then later they become women on the run.
Right.
And so as far, what schools? Are you in every school, every elementary school, or how does that work?
So each season we talk to each school and see if they are wanting to participate. And this season, this spring season, we actually have 6 elementary schools. So all of the public elementary schools, Gaffneau, Harborview, Riverbend, Mendenhall River, Glacier Valley, and Auk Bay will be participating.
Wow.
As well as Floyd Dryden Middle School.
Oh, wow. So you're in most of the schools. And you said it's a program for 3rd through 8th grade?
Right. So we have a program called Girls on the Run is 3rd through 5th grade.
Okay.
And then
okay.
They have another curriculum called Girls on Track, which this is a little bit more mature topics. It's kind of the same outline where you're training for that 5K and learning about healthy lifestyle choices, but just more mature topics for a 6th through 8th grade audience.
Right, right. So dealing with things that puberty, when puberty happens.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's Girls on Track in middle school.
Got it. So you look for coaches. And so let's say you are a parent and you really are like, this is a great idea for my young girl. How do they get their kids involved at the school level?
So starting next week, starting Monday, registration will be opening. And so all of the school counselors will have registration packets, and they'll be handing them out to interested students. And so if your daughter brings one home, then that's, you know, first come, first serve. So please get it back as soon as you can. All the information will be on the packet. In most schools, it's a school counselor. Sometimes it's a teacher, but those will be handed out next week.
And is it that they practice, they run once a week or twice a week? How does that work?
So every lesson, which is twice a week, incorporates a learning portion where they're sitting in their discussion-based activities, and then it also involves running. So running games. They're very creative about how they involve running. It's not like, we're going to go run a mile today. It's just running games, because that's what kids are more interested in. So every time, and then the running kind of builds throughout the 12-week season so that by the end they are prepared mentally and physically to run or walk a 5K.
That's really incredible. So what was the inspiration for this program? Is it a nationwide program that AWARE happened to be like, this is a great idea?
Yep, you got it. So it is Girls on the Run International, has been around since, I believe, 1996. It was started in North Carolina, and since then has just grown and is in most states. We have 2 councils within Alaska, so we're Girls on the Run of Southeast Alaska. And we were started in 2007 with AWARE kind of as the leader. And now we partner with WISH in Ketchikan, which is the domestic violence program there, and SAFE in Sitka, which is their domestic violence program, to be able to offer the program to all communities within Southeast Alaska. So we have lots of communities that are participating.
And so you've got Ketchikan and you've got girls in both places that are training for 5K and going through the same kind of really confidence-building exercises that the kids in Juneau are simultaneously.
Exactly, yeah. So this coming season we'll have Yakutat, Sitka, Ketchikan, and Haines on board.
Oh, wow.
As well as Juneau.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how many girls do you think participate in this program, or how did the fall shape up to be?
In the past season, the fall season, we had over 100 girls in Southeast Alaska, which about 60 of those were from Juneau. And that was only with 3 elementary and 1 middle school. And so now we're probably looking over 100 girls, I would imagine, in Juneau alone this spring, if all the teams are full, which I imagine they will be.
And is it the kind of thing that you've noticed that a girl gets involved and then she signs up the next season, then the next season, and everything?
Yeah, we do have a lot of girls that come back again and again, and that's okay. That's great. You know, as we know, when we're learning things, oftentimes we hear them 3 times and then they finally click. And so as the girls are maturing, maybe they get something from the first time around and they get something different from the second time around. And the curriculum does change every other season. It's a slightly different curriculum so that different activities – so the girls that repeat aren't doing the exact same things.
Mm-hmm. So how long has the program been going on in Juneau now?
Since 2007.
Oh, wow. So quite a few years. Yeah. How amazing. Mm-hmm. So if people are listening right now and they're like, I really want to be a coach because it sounds like a really, truly inspirational program, how can they get in contact with you and what do they need to do?
Yeah, just have them contact me again. My name is Julie, and I'm at Aware. 586-6623 is our business line at Aware, and you can call anytime and leave a message if I'm not there, and I'll get back to you. I do ask that people try to give me a heads up that they're planning to come to the coach training because we need to prepare for them. So I ask that they register for the training in advance, probably by Wednesday next week, and the training's on Saturday.
Okay, and it's a twice-a-week commitment?
Once or twice a week, yes. So a coach can commit. If they can only do once a week, that's fine, and it's about an hour and a half each time.
Okay, mm-hmm. Great. And it's usually around 2 to 4 p.m.?
2:30 to 4, yeah.
2:30 to 4. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, it sounds like a wonderful opportunity if people are wanting to be able to give back to young people, especially young girls, and helping them to make healthy choices in our community. That's really a great thing.
Great, thank you.
And is there a website that people can check out online to just get more information about Aware and then also about this about Girls on the Run?
Yeah, so Girls on the Run has a website, and it's GOTR, it stands for Girls on the Run, dash SE Alaska,
okay.
SoutheastAlaska.org. So GOTR dash Southeast, no, dash SEAlaska.org, or you can find us on Aware's webpage as well, which is awareak.org.
Okay, great. So there's a couple of different places where you can get the information and get involved. And that 5K, I heard about it in the fall, and you said it's in the spring, it's outside?
Yep, outside at Twin Lakes in the spring.
Okay, and is it May-ish?
May 10th.
May 10th,
yeah.
Already set. Look
already
at that.
Set.
Well, how cool. Well, thank you so much, Julie, for talking to us about the Girls on the Run program. You can find more information online. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser, and in the studio with me, the one, the only, Nancy DeCherney with Arts Up. Hi, Nancy.
We're having fun.
We are. Girls just want to have fun and run.
Okay. And run and fun. And at 4:30, you can go to Shoefly, and they're having a monthly style party. Does that sound like fun?
Is that today?
It's
at 4:30, so like I could leave here and go to
Shoe
Party.
Shoe Friday. Shoe Thursday. Yes. So there's that. Okay. But let's get serious.
Okay.
At 7 p.m., Scott Foster is going to talk about never test the depth of the water with both feet. It's an Audubon Society presentation. Should be fun. It is, and I'm not really sure where exactly. 49 Writers is also having their annual New Year's member potluck. It's hosted by Sarah Isto, and they'd like you to RSVP. 49 Writers is a group of writers from all around the state, and we have a little pod of them here. And they are going to plan some workshops for later in the year, and it's sort of fun. So if you're interested, get involved there. There's tango lessons. We're going to have a startup tonight with Review the Basics at the Dance Loft. 523-1995, if you want to tango on over after you go to the Shoefly thing.
Ooh, you get some hot shoes. Go wear them.
Gold Town Show in Philomena. This is going to run various times through Sunday. It's getting great reviews.
Oscar contender.
Wow.
Oscar contender.
Okay, so on Friday at 5 p.m., it's the second Friday author tea with Penny Louise. This is at the Douglas Library. It's free. There's a teen manga, or is it manja?
I don't know. What?
I'm not a teen anymore.
I don't have Monday.
But anyway, it's a club, and it's at the Zach Gordon Youth Center for kids ages 13 to 17.
We're so out of touch. I should probably look that up.
We should know these things. Okay. 7 p.m., Dan Hobson's doing classical guitar live at the Gold Room Baranoff. He just came out with another wonderful CD.
Did he?
Yeah, it's beautiful. Watercolor, you should get it.
I could just watch his fingers for hours. Yeah. Beautiful.
And also at 7 o'clock on Friday, the Alaskan Brew Company is having a pub crawl. They're introducing their Hopothermia Double IPA launch. You can go from, I think you just go from bar to bar, Imperial.
You crawl. But have you had that beer?
No, I haven't. Is it especially good?
It's. I'm a big hop fan.
Uh-huh.
The more hops, the better. And let me tell you.
Well, then this is for you. All right. But Friday night also is the grand opening of the next Rush Everlasting, the Perseverance Theater Club.
That's right. Yeah.
So, again, you know, we've got, what do they get? 6 weeks out of these runs?
Is that 4 weeks.
4 weeks.
Yeah.
So, plan your weeks, people, because this is a really importantly busy set of 4 weeks. So even though you have 4 weeks and there's several days in each weekend, it's not
you
enough.
You have to fit in wearable art. You have to fit in
the Alaska thing that's going on.
I know that looks cool, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I'm sure the symphony
I'm just putting it out there as a thing. Okay. At 9:30 p.m., it's North Country Cajun Club Live at the Alaska.
You know, Aaron was just here to talk about that. They're playing Friday and Saturday night, and I learned a lot about Cajun music.
Did you? What'd you learn?
Well, I learned that apparently you need, there's special accordions. You need different accordions in different keys, and I had no idea.
You didn't know they came like that.
No, I didn't know.
I just
know.
Thought they played Lady of Spain, and that was that.
Yeah, done and done. So.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we learned that about accordions. Okay, Saturday morning at 10:30, actually. I've told some people 10 o'clock, but you guys can get the coffee. At 10:30 at the Jack, we're having a community-wide discussion about the Willoughby Arts Complex planning. So if you are interested, want to find out what's going on, have thoughts about what we need, any of those things, please come. We have a consultant coming from Theater Projects, and he's going to sort of guide us through some discussions and help us come up with the best possible theater project. So there you have it. That's at 10:30 a.m. at the Jack. There's the second Saturday market out at the airport shopping center. They keep that going all year round. And at 10:30, it's coffee and collections up at the City Museum. It's free, and there's always good coffee. The Kennedy Street Centennial Portrait Project is the topic of discussion.
Cool.
Dan's at the Baranoff at 7 p.m., Rush Everlasting, the Cajun Club, Saturday. So whatever you missed Friday night, you can go do Saturday night, I guess. On Sunday, there's a ukulele jam at 11 a.m. Now, I was just noticing that in Skagway, they're starting to have a ukulele thing, too. How to make your own ukuleles.
How to make it?
Yeah.
Oh.
So way cool.
Well, we actually make ukulele jam.
So there you have it. You just mash them all up. And
okay. Yummy on toast.
At 2 p.m., our Lena Jones, who is the author of Rush Everlasting, is going to be doing a poetry reading at the downtown library with some friends. And that's free. That's at 2. At 3 p.m., the Daughters of the American Revolution chapter is making lap robes as a donation. They're out at the Valley Library.
Making what?
Lap robes. You know, like little Afghani type things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that you put on your lap.
Yeah.
Oh.
For your cat to sit on and not get you, you know, whatever. That sort of thing. Okay. Let's get back to business here. Let's see. What day is the 15th? I need to know that.
February 15th?
Yeah.
Oh, January.
No, January 15th.
It's in 6 days, so it'll be a Wednesday.
Okay, so we're not there yet. Monday at 6:30 p.m. is the Telluride Mountain Film Festival Program A at Goldtown.
Ooh.
Nickelodeon. Everyone loves that.
That's going to be cool.
Tuesday at 5 p.m., Emily Wall will talk about her what she did with her individual artist grant. The Arts Council gives out individual artist grants, and every January, the recipients have an opportunity to let you, as the public, know what they did with the money. And Emily is going to talk about what she did with hers. If you have any questions about getting grants, or just Emily's going to be talking about how she how she spent her summer vacation.
With money.
With money. Yes. So that's at 5 p.m. at the in the Jack Gallery, which, by the way, has the wearable art retrospective. It is amazing. So come on out.
It's totally cool. You got to check it out.
You got to go there.
Get you all pumped up.
6 p.m., there's a Juneau Urban Forestry Partnership annual meeting, the Downtown Library. And at 6:30, it's the Telluride Mountain Film Festival Program B. And at 7 o'clock, it's the Mud Rooms, and they're talking about grace is their topic this month.
Oh, that's probably why they didn't ask me to read. It's funny because when it was awkward, they were like, Shona, are you interested?
I don't know. I think that's kind of, that's awkward. Okay. So on Wednesday, at as you mentioned, it is the 15th, and at 10 a.m., wearable art tickets go on sale for the people who haven't already gotten them because they aren't Arts Council members.
Wait, when is that again?
That's Wednesday at 10 in the morning.
I didn't know that they hadn't, gone on
no,
sale.
No, because the sad fact is that I think we're down to 2 seats on Saturday. So if 2 seats and the table that is up for bid, which is currently bidding at $625. So I just throw that out there, folks.
Is it a table for 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah. So you could get together with some friends and have the best seat in the house, and it comes with a glass of champagne or, a little bottle of bubbly. And
you get bubbly?
Yeah.
You arranged that.
I'm going to get at that
bubbly
table, What the heck? Anyway, so there you have it. Wearable art tickets will finally be on sale to the general public on Wednesday at 10 in the morning. Let's see. There's a life. I found this interesting. At 6 p.m. on Wednesday, there's life drawing at the Alaska Robotics.
Yeah.
Doesn't that seem like a robotics life drawing?
Oh, funny thing. I get it. I was like,
that's interesting.
So they're doing live models over there.
Yeah.
That's really
well,
cool.
I guess they're all live robots.
Live
I'm
robots.
Not sure.
Well, they do build robots. Those guys, Pat and Aaron, build robots,
so maybe
too.
They're drawing the robots. Or
maybe
the robots
are
drawing the people. I don't know.
Ooh.
Should be fun anyway. But also at 6:30, Human Anatomy for Artists at the Canvas Studio Morphology. So it's just a drawing kind of time, I guess. And on Wednesday at 7:30 is your opportunity to see Program B of the Telluride Mountain Film Festival, once again at Goldtown. So Thursday next, it's the third Thursday family time at the Valley Library, and then we'll talk about next Thursday.
Wow, there's just so much going on, Nancy.
I'm afraid.
How does this town do it?
I'm not really certain. We just keep spinning around. So, yeah, it's exciting to see all the fun things that people have an opportunity to say and do. So.
Yeah. Hey, what's the, speaking of February, I know it's only January 9th, but I can't
but
help
it. But it's right here.
It's on me.
Yeah.
So, what's happening? Does the Jack have a first Friday?
Yes, we are having a first Friday, in spite of the fact that it is the day before Wearable Arts.
You'll be hanging that.
Yes. It's Suzanne Stoll, who has, she's not shown in a long time, so I'm very excited about her show. And at the same time as its first Friday opening, it will be the annual Rotary Wine Auction happening in the main hall. So a lot of stuff going on that first Friday in February. So we look forward to seeing you all down there, and we could use a lot of your help carrying all the things over to Centennial Hall, too.
That's right. If you're feeling like you want to volunteer for Wearable Art,
we could use some help. And I want to just say, I just launched the Governor's Awards for the Arts are here, and I just put up the volunteer sign-up sheet for that, too. So you can help us out with that. That's on the 30th.
And, Nancy, it's so cool. It's the first, it's the first time it's been here, right?
Not in a long time. It used to be here in the 80s. I don't remember when it left, but when I worked up at the governor's house, it used to be held at the governor's house. And then it moved up to Anchorage as a cost-saving measure, I think.
Okay.
And I'm really happy that they're bringing it back. It's going to be very nice.
Me too. And Juneau could really represent on that night.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, the 30th?
It's the 30th, and I believe Bamiwa is going to be the closing act for it. So.
That's what I hear.
If you don't know what Bamiwa is, look it up.
That's right. Come on the 30th. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Nancy
thank you.
Cherney.
See you next week.
See you next week.
And this is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Tune in tomorrow to Juno Afternoon. That's Friday, January 10th. You'll talk with Steve Vick about a new nonprofit, Noble Paws, and we'll get a preview of the Friday fireside lecture about polar bears, Writer's Almanac, and more. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Most of this is probably baked in his mind, and he wants to consult with them, but I think...